Wherever we go,
with Jeremy Scott.
Well, you know, Halloween's right around the corner when you get the first crud of the season from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I am Jeremy Scott. But, you know, I'm home and I'm in my sanitized studio, so nobody's getting the crud tonight except me and this microphone in which I talk into tonight. So that's why I wasn't on the air this past Saturday night. But fear not. Dead air this Saturday night, God willing, knock on wood, on Into the Paranormal at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern. Tonight, though, we're going to be talking with my good friend Nicole Strickland about the RMS Queen Mary. Could perhaps be one of the most haunted places, they say, in all of the world. I guess really depending on who you talk to, but that is the legend that comes with the Queen of the Seas, as it's become to be known. For those who are not familiar with this, it was primarily a ship that was used in the late 20s and early 30s. It was actually retired fully in 1967, but by the 50s, it had really started to show its age. It was one of two ships that dominated the transatlantic passenger transportation market until, of course, those things known as jet airplanes took to the skies. And, well, then there became better methods to get from point A to point B. And, of course, it then fell out of repair. It was, I think, in the last maybe year or two, there's been some developments involving who now owns the Queen Mary and whether or not its previous owners may have not taken care of the property so well. Joining me tonight is paranormal and afterlife researcher Nicole Strickland, who has been interested in the supernatural since childhood. In addition to her innate psychic and empathic abilities, her experience in the fields of counseling, education, psychology, and social work give her a unique perspective on studying the unknown. Here she is, Nicole Strickland. Welcome back into the Paranormal.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
It's good to have you here. So what's happened with the Queen Mary in the last couple of years? Did somebody not take so well care of it, from what I understand?
Well, yeah. I mean, so the management, Evolution Hospitality is a great management company, but, you know, the leaseholder, there was financial misappropriation of funds and things of that nature. And so for the first time in like 40 years, the city of Long Beach is now in charge of the Queen Mary. So they were shooting for an October 1st reopen date. Obviously, that didn't happen. There's some upkeep and upgrades that need to be done. Of course, they need to clean it because, of course, it's been closed since the pandemic. So I'm thinking, I don't know an open reopen date. Once I know, you'll know. I'm thinking probably in the new year, maybe January. I don't know. But it's in good hands now. And they're doing some, I want to say it's about $2.8 million, I don't have the figure right in front of me, of urgent repairs and things of that nature. They started with removal of the lifeboats, a new HVAC system, and other types of repairs. So she's in good hands now, which is very... I guess fulfilling, because for a while there, I was like, oh gosh, what's going on? But yeah, so, and it's one of those things, she's gone through this before, and for whatever reason, she always prevails. So, you know, it's odd how that works out. But
yeah, tell us about the history of the ship, because it has gone through quite a lot.
Yeah. So, gosh, sometimes I can go on tangents, and I know we only have a limited amount of time. So just a brief overview. Her design concept, it all started with Samuel Cunard, and so his vision for steamships. And so fast forward to about 1926, her design concepts began, and this was at a time when different countries were competing for large vessels. And so she was built actually in 1934. She was supposed to sail earlier, but with the depression that halted the building and everything. And so as a means to get her completed after the depression, Cunard Company and the White Star, that's the famed builder of the Titanic, they had to merge. And so her launch took place September 26, 1934. Her Majesty Queen Mary of Teck christened her. And so, like you said at the beginning, she was designed to be a luxury ocean liner on the North Atlantic route, carrying people from all walks of life, celebrities, dignitaries, business moguls, members of the aristocracy. And so from Southampton to Cherbourg to New York City, that was her route. And so then with the advent of World War II, she was requisitioned mainly for troop ship duties, mainly for two reasons, her size and her speed. Her sister liner, the RMS Queen Elizabeth, as well, came a couple of years later, was also used as well as a troop ship. So she served as a troop ship. Slowly, the capacity of servicemen increased, that especially after America entered the war. And at one point, there were 16,683 souls on board. During that time, during the wartime, she was also a hospital ship as well. She carried German and Italian prisoners of war. So then after the war, and actually it was Winston Churchill who actually sailed on the Queen Mary several times. He, I forget the exact quote, but he basically said that the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth helped lessen the duration of World War II by at least about 2 years. So then after the war, of course, she repatriated servicemen and carried war brides, because a lot of these women were marrying American servicemen. So they needed to have a ship to take them to America and Canada. So after that, she resumed her ocean liner duties, the same duties as during the pre-war phase, and then retired in Long Beach December 9th of 1967. All kinds of different bids came. Long Beach won out at $3.45 million. And since that time, she's been a museum, hotel, attraction. There's shops on board. There's tours on board. There's restaurants, all kinds of things for you to do. And, you know, can't talk about the Queen Mary without mentioning ghosts and the paranormal. So that's just kind of a very skeletal overview of the ship's history.
I'm glad you used the word skeletal. It fits right in with the theme.
Yeah, of the season. Yeah.
But, no, you mentioned it was used as a hospital. It also carried prisoners of war. There were soldiers there. And I can imagine what all three of those scenarios carry in common is that a fair amount of people had to have lost their lives in that location.
Yes, and there's documented, crew deaths and passenger deaths. But I think during the war, more men lost their lives than they could actually officially document. I mean, for example, the Queen Mary was designed on the North Atlantic route. So when she sailed these very hot, humid climates during wartime, the ship, especially the lower decks, got extremely hot. So men would get, you know, heat stroke and things of that nature, and fights would break out. And so one example is the German and Italian prisoners of war that sailed on board. And they actually, there's a section in the forward cargo hold, it's known as the pit. It's closed off now, but they actually held German and Italian prisoners of war down there. And I've been down there. I've actually investigated down there, and it was standing room only for them. They fed them bread and water lowered in buckets. And then, of course, sadly, when those men perished, they would unceremoniously throw their bodies overboard. So deaths by a disease, accidents, sickness, things of that nature. So yeah, absolutely. Just the history is so legendary that I think is a primary foundation for a lot of her spiritual and paranormal events.
So any notorious deathly incidents that we can later track back as afterlife visits on the Queen Mary?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Commodore Britton, for example, the very first Commodore actually passed away on board in the officers' quarters there. That's an example. One famous one was during World War II, October 2nd of 1942. She had escort ships because she had to sail in this number 8 zigzag motion to try to evade these German U-boats. And so Hitler had a bounty on her. Any submarine U-boat skipper that could sink the Queen Mary would win the Iron Cross with oak leaves and get $250,000. Of course, that never happened. So an incident occurred. One of her escort ships, the HMS Curacao, It was a World War One escort. It served in World War One, and then in World War Two with one of the Queen Mary's escort ships. And so on October 2nd in the afternoon, they were both sailing in this zigzag motion. Their invisibility was super clear. And so both Captain Boutwood of the Curacao and Commodore Illingworth of the Queen Mary, both had this slight miscalculation of degrees and things of that nature. So what happened is the Queen Mary hit, sliced in half the Curacao. Over 300 of its sailors perished either by drowning, burning, or sadly, tragically, being sucked underneath the Queen Mary and dismembered by her propellers.
Oh, wow.
So there is a section near, it's below the rope locker area on our deck. There was some damage to the Queen Mary's bow. Of course, the Queen Mary survived. The men were very meticulous in getting it repaired and things of that nature. But to this day, and I've actually experienced this myself, you can hear disembodied screams of men. And so we do think that that is a residual type of phenomenon from that Curacao incident.
Is it because it was mostly men who served or lost their lives there? Is there a sort of significance there?
Yeah, because over 300 British sailors of the Curacao actually died in that event. And so during the time, the Queen Mary had strict orders from the Navy to not stop. If she stopped, she would have been a sitting duck. So Commodore Illingworth pondered, should I stop or should I keep going? And he decided, of course, to save. There were over 15,000 men on the Queen Mary at this time. So he decided to keep going. And so its servicemen threw out as many life preservers as possible, but sadly over 300 of the Curacao sailors perished. So, and then there's an area too, and it's the propeller room, which is on the port side toward the aft end of the ship. It's just forward of the rudder control room. A lot of people in that area get like a sense of anxiety or forlorn feelings, hearing voices in that area, seeing shadow energy. So again, that could be attributed to that Curacao disaster. It's hard to know.
So then there have to be certain areas, some of which you've already described for us on the ship, that have more or less activity, right?
Absolutely. And I think the entire ship is fair game, but there are certain areas, of course, that are considered hotspots. And this is, I think, because they're more highly traveled to. They take people here on the tours. They're more known. So you have more people going in day in and day out wanting to experience something. But I think any area on the Queen Mary is fair game. It's just some areas are just more known than others. Some can be attributed to history. Others, we just don't know. Some people think that there's a portal, and I don't know the origin of this, why people think it's in the women's changing room in the former first and third class pool. I think the entire ship can be a portal to the other side. It's weird how that started with the women's changing room. I don't know who originated that, if it was maybe Peter James, the late resident psychic on board. He's the one that actually coined Jackie, the little girl spirit on board. He felt that she passed away in the second class pool. But again, no, her origins haven't been discovered as to how she passed away or whether a girl by the name of Jackie even sailed on the Queen Mary. So that's something that we're still looking into.
What about things that you've experienced personally while you've been on the ship?
Oh, goodness. So many. So, I mean, since day one, I first stepped on board in 2005. And the very first night that I stayed on board, it was AO24. So there are three hotel decks from top to bottom, M, A, and B deck. And so I was on port side forward, AO24. And I remember one night exiting my cabin, and I was turning left to go forward, but something told me, you know what, stop and look behind you. And then when I looked behind me, I saw a little girl standing like about 10 feet down the hall. And I didn't know at all at this time who the spirits were or anything like that. Later on, I realized that my first sighting was that of Jackie. And so everywhere I've been in the engine room, boiler rooms, pretty much everywhere on the ship. And I've had a lot of different experiences, a lot of visual sightings. So shadow phenomena, full bodied, partially manifested apparitions, disembodied voices, phantom smells. I've been touched. I've had my hair kind of not yanked, but, you know, played with. I've been touched on my shoulder, things of that nature. So a lot, it's very visual and very auditory. I would say those two are very popular on board. Yeah. So, I mean, I have so many different types of experiences and captured audio in the form of EVP and disembodied voices, even some ITC captures from RDEC Forward there in the rope locker room. Some photos have been captured that I personally have captured, but others have captured as well that are just really telling of paranormal phenomena. And it's one of those reasons too, the Queen Mary seems to be very consistent in her activity. She waxes and wanes a little bit. Sometimes you can go on and it's more quiet. Other times it's way more active, but there's this consistent level and amount of activity that so many people from all walks of life report. And that's what makes her, I think, so interesting.
I'm interested on the what you hear when you get these audio recordings on the Queen Mary, because these voices tell stories, and I'm interested in what they might say.
So a very good question. So, you know, because I've been going there, an example, because I've been going there for years, you know, I think there's some residual energy as on the vessel as well as intelligent. If I had to give a percentage, I would probably say it's 60%. Intelligent, maybe 40% residual, or 70-30, somewhere in that nature. That's just me based on my experiences. I can go on board, and when I, within the first few minutes, and this happens a lot, I'll go on board and I'll hear my name called when no one's around. I've male and female energies. I've heard Nicole is here as a disembodied voice, asking questions that are relevant to her history. You get historically relevant answers. We've had captures of men, or conversations of men talking in various different types of languages, be it German, Italian, even as well on board. So one example I can give, there's many, but I'll just give one. It was an ITC capture, actually two of them. And I was on my friend Matt Schultz's late night weekend paranormal investigation tour there. And we were doing an ITC spirit box session in the rope locker, which is RDEC Forward area. And so we were asking, you know, what was the number of the war that the Queen Mary was involved in? And we got an answer of two. Another question was, what was the name of the evil dictator during World War II? And we got an answer of Hitler. So a very historically relevant answers, whether it's in the form of EVP or disembodied voices. So there's a lot of intelligence there on board. And it's phenomenal what you can capture.
So voices that you could identify, but also voices that seem to sense a presence as well, to know your name.
That's what it seems, and it's bizarre. And I'm one of these, you know, I don't just automatically assume something's paranormal. I like to really examine to make sure it's something that I can't naturally or logically explain. But I would say before the pandemic, for in the maybe 2 years prior, maybe 2017 to 2019, almost every time I would go on board, within the first few minutes, I would hear, and it would sometimes be whispers in my ear, "Hi, Nicole," or I would hear, "Nicole is here." And I would look around, and these were at times when no one was present, and these were whispers. So it was something that, you know, it's not like you're in a big group of people and maybe there's someone else that's visiting who has a name of Nicole and it's maybe a living guest. It's nothing like that. So it's situations like that. I mean, some of the resident energies, for example, JP, his first name was John. He was an 18-year-old crewman that sadly died on July 10th, 1966. He was found crushed in the watertight door number 13 on the starboard shaft alley side of the aft engine room. And so he's responds to his name. One former crew member captured a very compelling EVP. He went in there and said, "John, are you back here?" And he got a response in EVP, so not a disembodied voice, saying, you can hear the inhalation of the breath, and then you hear the response either yeah or yes. So it's just a lot of intelligence, a lot of knowledge on the part of the spirits of the ship's history. And that's, to me, super profound. So
you mentioned stuff. Yeah, you mentioned earlier some phantom smells. And so I'm wondering if these were smells of a bygone era, or maybe smells associated with certain individuals.
Absolutely. One famous one has to do with Winston Churchill. Now, during the war, he actually planned the D-Day invasion on board the Queen Mary, believe it or not. So his entire entourage stayed on M deck. So during the war, when he sailed, the entire M deck was reserved for him. So today there is a suite. It's on the starboard side of M deck where the suites are, and it's named the Winston Churchill suite. A lot of people, interestingly, will walk by there when no one is staying in the room, and they will smell a very profound, strong cigar smoke, similar to the types of profound or strong cigars that he actually used to smoke. So
I'm guessing smoking's not allowed, right?
It's not, no, and it's not allowed. It's just, and it's always right around there. Some people, I've even actually I've smelt it too in Promenade near the Piccadilly Circus area where the stores are. I've smelt it there. I've smelt it on Sun Deck, but a lot of people get it by his former suite, which is interesting. And another story, another interesting one that I like to share is there was a maid in there one day that was cleaning the Winston Churchill suite, and all of a sudden she saw a man appear out of thin air. She didn't know who it was, but then I guess he disappeared, and then she happened to look on at one of the walls, and there was, of course, a photo of Winston Churchill hanging on the wall, and she said, "That's the man that just appeared right before me." So it's just, it's one story after another of very profound experiences that people can have. And a lot of it's personal. A lot of it's not necessarily captured data or captured evidence. A lot of personal experiences can happen on board. And so you have to factor those in as well.
Okay, this has all the makings of a haunted hotspot. Do things also go missing on the Queen Mary?
Absolutely, especially in the hotel deck areas. Oh gosh, this has happened to me. I've been on board, and the little security chains on the inside of the door come off by themselves. Dresser drawers will open up. You can see sometimes or feel the imprint of someone like sitting or laying on the bed. I've interviewed people where, you know, if they're staying on board, they'll have like their luggage or their items on the table, and then they go to the bathroom and then come back and some items are missing or misplaced, things of that nature. So a lot of there's a lot of psychokinetic type of activity on board.
Back to the voices, because I'm interested in what kinds of voices, since this was the late 20s and early 30s, 40s and 50s, you know, when the Queen Mary was in her prime. I know that there were a lot of hands involved, you know, not only Americans, but Germans and Italians and you know, the French, and I'm sure the list goes on. So did you hear voices in other languages?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. German, we've definitely, and it's interesting, we've had situations where we will ask questions, for example, in English, and we'll get responses back. And German seems to be very popular. Italian as well. There are a couple of, I'm blanking on the other languages, but yeah, that does happen. And so, you know, people sail from all over the world on this vessel. So it's, you know, it comes as no surprise. We were actually down in, it's considered the forward engine room / X hall. And we were doing an EVP / I think it was just an EVP session, if I remember correctly. And we ended up capturing two or three men having conversations with themselves in German. And so, you know, that's something that you don't really see that often, especially in America. But considering the history and, you know, people from all over the world sailed on board, you know, it really comes at no surprise. So
was there any clothing that ever turned up? And you know, like from the periods of time when, you know, people were actually on the ship, living on the ship.
So clothing, like, are you talking about like clothing, like at porting out of nowhere, or just, you know, people seeing like phantom clothing, or
have you had just floating sweaters or anything like that?
Yeah, no, I didn't know if that was, I didn't know if you were talking about like, if, you know, clothing just.
Sure. Has it just turned up mysteriously?
I don't know. I haven't heard a story about that per se, but I don't recall that. I'm sure maybe someone has had an experience, or maybe, you know, they have like events. What's interesting is they'll have like Art Deco events, and they'll have like anniversary types of events. And even myself, people will dress up from that era. So like from the 30s, 40s, 50s even. And so it's interesting when that happens. I think that might stir activity, because, you know, if these energies, especially the intelligent ones, are seeing people dressed in clothing that kind of matches their era, that may obviously, you know, spur things on and increase types of activity. There have been apparitional sightings of women in like Victorian garb or men in, you know, old fashioned suits, you know, from like the 30s and 40s, soldiers, groups of phantom soldiers walking around, even in the hotel deck areas, which is, comes as no surprise because they stayed all over the ship during World War II. So that does happen. You do see like, you know, apparitions and energies that are dressed from their time period.
Do you have a favorite story from the Queen Mary?
Oh my gosh, favorite. Oh my God, that's so hard. I have so many. One that for me, I think is important because it goes to show it's a culmination of different experiences. So it was again on the hotel deck. So it was A167 starboard, aft end of the ship. And so it was late at night and I came back, in my stateroom. I decided to do just a brief burst EVP session. And so I was sitting on the bed and all of a sudden I saw this like grayish black, shadow kind of morphing coming through the door. And so I said, you know, I noted in my recorder, I just saw someone enter. Can you tell me your name? And I got a response EVP. It wasn't heard at the time. Either it says Michael or Micah. But then a few hours later, this is way early in the morning, I was awake and I was just laying in bed. And then all of a sudden I noticed that my bathroom door opened by itself and I latched it before I went to bed. And so I heard the doorknob twist. And then when I looked, I saw the door was ajar. And then I saw the bottom part of a leg, like a leg with like pantsuits and like a shiny, like black shoes. So then I just laid there and observed. And then that went away. And about like, I would say maybe 30 seconds later, I felt like two hands almost pressed down on me. And I don't know if they were meaning to get in contact with me or if it was some sort of like residual type of situation where it was a residual phenomenon of someone actually getting in bed. I don't know. It's stuff like that. When you get several, like in a row like that, it spikes your curiosity. So that I have so many, oh my gosh, we'd be here all night.
Fantastic, yeah. Nicole. We appreciate you coming on and talking about the history of the Queen Mary. So we think that it could be back open at some point in 2023. I know it's got a lot of repairs ahead. Looks like somewhere in the range of $5 million or more.
Yeah, there's a lot more ahead. I think they're doing urgent. I think something around 2.83, if I have my figure right. It's not in front of me. But I think we're shooting for 2023. And again, once I know, you'll know. I've had so many people ask me and I've, you know, told them, I don't know, you know, soon, we just have to wait. But once I know, you'll know.
The spirits are going to be more active because there haven't been visitors the last couple of years?
I've pondered this and I've thought about it. That's an interesting question. I think so. I think absolutely. It'll be interesting to get back on there and see, you know, especially in the first or second month to see if people are reporting an increase in that. But I think that's a high possibility.
Nicole Strickland, good to have you on here. Author of the book, Haunted Queen of the Seas, also Spirited Queen Mary and RMS Queen Mary Voices from Her Voyages. And her website is authornicolestrickland.com. So good to have you with us here.
Thank you so much for having me and have a happy and safe Halloween.
Happy and safe Halloween to you as well. And for those who are going to be with us this weekend, it's Dead Air, our Halloween broadcast on Saturday night at 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern. We've been planning that one for a couple of weeks, putting together some spooky sights and sounds for you. So until then, or tomorrow night, if you choose to join us right back here, same time, same place. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Good night, everyone.